Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide. 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
For your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you live from New Hampshire. We're at the Radio Row, organized by Talkers Magazine and TalkRadioNews.com. And with me right now, and we're going to get into some of the issues, some of particularly the debate that happened over the weekend. It was fascinating. And in fact, we can get into some of that right now. We have with us Rand Paul, the middle son of Ron Paul, and a surrogate for a campaignee for, or campaigner for, or how would you characterize
Jack it? Jack of all trades. Whatever they ask me to do, I'm happy to do it. Okay. So, and I understand I'm here on Air America, the fair and balanced.
There you go.
That's your slogan, the fair and balanced. Oh, no, that's that other station that wouldn't let us on last night.
That's right.
How ridiculous.
Tell us about that, Rand.
Well, I tell you what, I think it really, if Fox News credibility was not already damaged, I mean, it's in the toilet. I mean, how can a news organization, a credible news, if they want to be a credible news organization, not let Ron Paul in the debates?
Well, the reality is that Fox News never has been a news organization. It was started by an old Reagan operative, Roger Ailes. It's an op-ed outlet, you know, of, by, and for, you know, wealth and power, basically.
Well, think about how it's getting smaller, their audience, because, for example, the Democrats will not debate on Fox because they don't think they're objective.
Right.
Now they're winnowing the field of the Republicans. They really hate the fact that my dad is a fiscal conservative but opposed to the war.
Well, he's not a corporatist.
Yes.
I mean,
and it annoys them to death, though, because he speaks a lot to some of their people in their audience, and they do not want any of those people to be confused with ideas like the fact that war should only be declared by Congress.
Right.
You know, they don't.
What a radical notion. Yeah. It's only in the Constitution.
Yeah. They don't want their people confused by hearing that message. They also don't want their people to hear that maybe it's fiscally conservative not to be in war. We've spent $1 trillion in Iraq. I mean, the most tremendous loss is the loss of lives, but we've also lost an enormous amount of treasure, and we're continuing to.
Yeah.
And we have to have another message. There has to be another way. And if the Republican Party doesn't want Ron Paul, what do they want? They want him to run as an independent? Do you think that's going to help them?
Yeah.
They're foolish. They're cutting off their nose to spite their face. At least the local New Hampshire GOP withdrew their support. And there were some media articles written about that. But really, this morning we had Congressman Barry Goldwater Jr., and he was on Fox News. And he had the audacity to tell the announcer, he said, you know, shame on Fox News. Shame on Fox News for not having Ron Paul.
Yeah.
You know, my dad raised $20 million last quarter.
Yeah, it's not insignificant.
He got double digits in Iowa. Most people are saying he'll have double digits in New Hampshire.
We're talking with Rand Paul, the middle son of Ron Paul and one of the more tireless campaigners for him. Ron Paul, of course, the libertarian Republican, I guess that's a reasonable description, who is showing very well in the Republican debates and in the Republican polls and things. And it seems to me, Rand, as an outsider, I mean, I'm very much not a Republican, that the party's melting down. It's like people are unhappy with their own nominees, their own candidates, and this isn't just at the presidential level. I mean, you're seeing congressional races and senatorial races all over the country. You're seeing stuff like Trent Lott. You know, I mean, how corrupt does it get, right? He's going to resign early just so that he can beat the deadline, so that he can become a lobbyist. He yesterday announced his lobbying firm. I mean, Americans are starting to look at the Republican Party and go, what? You know, are they going to go the way of the Whigs?
I see that big smile on your face. You better wipe that smile off. But you're exactly right. Do you know what the biggest news out of Iowa? I mean, it was big news that Barack Obama won. His campaign's a big deal. But you know the biggest news?
What's that?
250,000 Democrats voted and about 100,000 Republicans.
Yeah.
Republicans are going down to defeat. Republicans are demoralized. Their party's shrinking. But you know why? They don't understand that 70% of the American people want the war to end.
Yeah.
We've been there longer than World War II. The other just really thing they don't quite grasp is George Bush maintains that he can go to a war in Iran with no further authority. Yeah. But here's where your Democrats are letting us down. Your Democrats refused to even put that in their legislation. All they had to do was write in, George Bush, you cannot go into Iran without our authority. And Pelosi, Reid, they wimped out, and they took that out of the legislation. You've got some good Democrats. Kucinich has been good on your side. Yep. He votes against the funding for the war. Barack's against the war, but he won't vote against the funding.
Right.
Stand up, be a man, vote against the funding, too. Ron Paul takes the heat. Think how it is for a conservative Republican in Texas to vote against George Bush's budgets and to vote against the funding for the war.
Yeah. You know, we're talking with Rand Paul, Ron Paul's middle son. And, Rand, the positions that your father takes, Dwight Eisenhower famously said that there's a small group of cranky Republicans down in Texas who are opposed to Social Security and similar programs of the New Deal, the rights of workers to get unemployment insurance and things. These are all things that your father opposes. He said their number is small and they are stupid, and if they ever get control of the Republican Party, they'll destroy it. Are you concerned that your father's positions on some of these issues that are real bread-and-butter issues and that the majority of Americans actually disagree with him on? The majority of Americans want there to be Social Security. They want there to be public education.
Right, but are you concerned
that that's going to harm the Republican Party?
But I don't think most of the people have completely heard what my dad's message is on that.
I get that. Yeah, for sure.
For example, on Social Security, we do want to let young people opt out. If you let young people opt out, you're right. What happens to the tax base? How do you pay for those who are on Social Security at present? You can't do it unless you quit spending hundreds of billions of dollars overseas.
Well, actually, you can do it very easily since the Social Security Fund is a separate fund simply by lifting the cap so that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates pay the same amount as you and me.
Well, that's one way. But let me finish on the Social Security. We're not for getting rid of Social Security immediately. Well, what we'd like to do is give people an option, give young people an option. It's a bad investment. Social Security is a bad investment. Even if you separate it out, it's a bad investment. Your 401k, your IRA,
Of Social Security recipients are literally widows, orphans, and disabled people. It's not an investment.
Yeah, and widows.
Social Security is not a retirement program.
Widows get ripped off by it, too, because their money's not left. They get spousal benefits, but they don't get their husband's money or their wife's money. If you put it in a 401k, it's your money and it comes back. If Social Security actually was a trust fund, the money wasn't being spent to finance wars in Iraq.
Well, it's being borrowed.
But if it weren't being spent or borrowed and the money were actually there in your account and you were getting it, you'd be earning a much better rate of interest than you are.
Well, that money's in treasuries right now, and they are earning interest.
It's not returned. You get 1% at best or negative 1% on your earnings in Social Security. It's not a good investment.
I think those treasuries are paying around 4.5% right now.
But that's not what you get. If you put your money...
Well, it depends on how long you live. You know, if you live a long life, you might get 20-30% on your investment.
No, that's not true. But the other thing is that what happens to a lot of working people, their longevity is somewhat less, and so the system exists on working people dying at a younger age.
Yeah, it's an insurance program. That's how insurance programs
minorities
work.
Minorities have historically died at a younger age. They're being ripped off by Social Security. The spousal benefits go down, and you don't get your full benefits. But the thing is with Social Security is Ron Paul doesn't want to kick people out in the streets. It's not this thing where we're going to have no Medicare, no Social Security. Ideally, you have to ask yourself, as a good progressive like you are, I won't even call you a liberal, good progressive, you have to ask yourself, who distributes goods and services better? Do you want FEMA distributing your water, or do you want the private marketplace distributing your water? Do you want the head of FEMA to deliver your health care, or would you rather a good marketplace deliver your
health care? I'm rather fond of my socialized police department, my socialized fire department. I think that there are some things that the government actually does very well, and the fact that there's not somebody in there sucking 20% off the top as dividends to their stockholders, there's not a CEO for my local police department making $500,000 a year, there's not, 16 guys on the board of directors pulling down a couple million bucks a year. We don't have somebody like Bill McGuire at the second largest health insurance company in the United States taking a $1.78 billion paycheck. I think that's a good thing, Rand.
Right.
But let's move on. We have just a couple of seconds left. I wanted to ask you, before we've got to take a break here and wrap this up, but your father tonight is going to cross a picket line to go on the Leno show. Is that because Ron Paul essentially thinks that unions shouldn't have picket lines?
No, not at all. Labor should organize and have pickets. It's their way of having a voice against corporate management. Nothing. I think it really doesn't enter into anything that he's doing with going on Jay Leno tonight. going on Jay Leno tonight is to tell Fox News that they can't determine who the candidates are.
Right.
And it is a venue for us. We have to take a venue. Jay Leno's audience will dwarf Fox's audience from last night. And you know what I love you more than that? CNN bought the ABC debate and ran it in competition with Fox. I don't know what the media share was, but I'll bet you CNN may have beat Fox last night. Does anybody know?
Yeah, I haven't seen the numbers, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
I love that. I laughed all night thinking about having the competition. Fox needs some competition. Shame on them.
Yeah, indeed. So your dad's position going on the Leno show tonight, what is his position on labor?
Well, that he's all for labor having the ability to negotiate with management, so he's not opposed to unions.
And management having the ability to simply fire people if they go on strike, right?
Well, I mean, the marketplace works back and forth, and sometimes unions are good for people, and then sometimes if they make the wages too high, there's no union and no job. So, I mean, there's nothing bad to it.
Rand Paul with the Ron Paul campaign. Rand, what's the website?
RonPaul2008.com.
Great. Thank you very much. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Who said the hardest thing in the world to understand is the income tax? It was Albert Einstein. Now, if he had a hard time figuring it out, what about the rest of us mere mortals? Many of us can and do find ourselves in a jam with the IRS. Luckily for you, there's Taxmasters. The former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters will solve your IRS problems. Do you owe back taxes? Being audited? Have several years of unfiled returns? Has an IRS agent visited your home or your place of business? Write this number down. 1-800-581-0452. Again, 1-800-581-0452. The former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters are waiting for your call to help solve your IRS problems right now. So call or go to txmstr.com for more info. You do not want to represent yourself with the IRS. Taxmasters has helped many good people just like you. The IRS has stepped up its collection efforts, so now more than ever, you need to call Taxmasters. Call Taxmasters right now at 1-800-581-0452. Taxmasters will solve your IRS problems.
Straight talk without the narrow mind.
If there be any appeal to those who may not believe in climate change or global warming, it would be to their economic interests.
Tom Hartman, Heidi Tauber, and Carl Wolfson.
You know, I've often said about same-sex marriage, what it would pump into the economy with weddings, and you know how much is spent on a wedding.
Tom Hartman, Heidi Tauber, and Carl Wolfson.
When we're talking about economics here, perhaps that's one way to reach people who don't necessarily believe in climate change to do something about it.
Morning 6 to 9, AM 620, KPOJ. Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
See the 2008 Portland International Auto Show at the Convention Center January 24th through 27th. To kick off the auto show and win prizes, come to Cedar Hills Crossing Saturday, January 19th from noon to 4 and represent KPOJ in the best car racing game ever created. Gran Turismo by PS2. More info at cedarhillcrossing.com. Don't miss the Brides Against Breast Cancer Tour of Gowns January 18th through 20th at the Lloyd Center Doubletree Hotel. Find the wedding gown of your dreams at incredible savings and help grant wishes for men and women diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. Details at 620kpoj.com, keyword brides. Win a class of your choice at a Phoenix Workshop. Class sizes are small, schedules are flexible, and you get plain language instruction. Whether you want to do cool things on the web, design a logo, newsletter, or spreadsheet, or save money by maintaining your already live website, log on to 620kpoj.com, keyword contest, and enter to win today.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.
Somebody just died while you're listening to me. And that somebody is somebody's sister, brother, mom, dad, daughter, son, or friend. 450 people die a day, 19 an hour, from lung cancer. I'm Deborah Morosini, and I lost my sister, Dana Reeve, to lung cancer. Please help us save lives at the Bonnie J. Addario Lung Cancer Foundation. Donate today at www.lungcancerfoundation.org or call 866-926-LUNG. Lung cancer matters, too, and so does everyone we love.
Each winter, your immune system is threatened by little organisms known as... your kids. So the cold-fighting experts at Theraflu bring you the new dietary supplement, Fortifence, an immune-boosting formula powered by vitamin C, zinc, and echinacea to help your body's natural defenses. Fortifence from the makers of Theraflu comes in a hot drink with natural goodness you'll see in your cup, bracing you for when the kids come home.
Mommy!
New Fortifence. Give your immunity a fighting chance.
Take along with a healthy diet.
Hi, this is
Bruce Hornsby. I'm here to tell you that when it comes to housing discrimination, that's not the way it has to be. Some things can change and should, and you can help. Join the effort to end housing discrimination by becoming a member of the National Fair Housing Alliance today. Visit our website at www.nationalfairhousing.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Everywhere I go, seems like bushes on TV. We shed blood in the name of liberty.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. And speaking of the right to unionize, and following up on our conversation with Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, we have with us Jim Roosevelt, the grandson of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Jim, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you again, Tom.
That's so glad to have you with us. Jim, you're a Democratic activist. You're the CEO of a not-for-profit health insurance company in Massachusetts, as I recall.
That's right.
One of the three big ones there. And your grandfather left us this extraordinary legacy, the New Deal, which included Social Security and, in 1935, the Wagner Act, the right to unionize, the right to enforce the right to unionize. What are your thoughts on folks like Ron Paul and others within the Republican Party? There's a growing libertarian streak within the Republican Party who have been really, you know, since Reagan, working so aggressively to deconstruct, and I would say to some extent already have deconstructed, the New Deal, your grandfather's legacy.
Well, you know, we had a Republican libertarian governor in Massachusetts, Bill Weld, and he gradually, over the time that he served as governor, discovered there were things that government really needed to do. And in fact, my cousin from the Teddy Roosevelt side of our family, Mark Roosevelt, convinced him that the state needed to get more involved in the quality of our education in Massachusetts. And that has been a great success in raising the performance of our educational system in Massachusetts, whether it's education, police protection, fire protection, or Medicare, government's role complements the role of the private sector in our regulated capitalist society.
Yeah, it's you know, after Rand left, well, I think I did say to him, you know, on the air, I'm very fond of my socialist police department, my socialist fire department, my socialist educational system, although that's dangerous language like that. But, there are so many things that government actually can do well. And Reagan coming in, and it is, I believe it was his first inaugural, he said government isn't the solution to the problem, it is the problem. And that meme, that thought virus, has really taken hold in the United States in the psyche and over the last 25, 26 years. What was it that your grandfather did or said, or was it the times, that caused people to once again have confidence and faith in the ability of we the people, this great democratic republic, to actually solve some of our own problems?
In 1933, we saw crystallized the problem of an unregulated capitalist economy. Not the problems of a capitalist economy, I'm careful to say, an unregulated capitalist economy. We're seeing that right now in the subprime meltdown,
yep.
A classic result of lack of regulation when a pure sell more loans, sell more products of whatever kind, without looking at financial qualifications or safety or ability to pay, or subsidy, which is sometimes what we need to get people into a productive capitalist society. That's really what the New Deal was all about. It was about making capitalist society work for all Americans instead of just in the short term for people who were taking the cream off the top of the pitcher.
Yeah. And the extent to which the New Deal is being deconstructed, what's your sense of where we're at in that?
There certainly has been a determined effort, first by the Ronald Reagan gross characterization of government is the problem, as opposed to government has problems, the private markets have problems. The two of them together in a reasonable fashion can produce a society that is economically fair and provides opportunity for all Americans. So that gross characterization certainly has been, for more than 25 years, an attack on the proper role of government in a capitalist economy. That has then evolved in some cases to the extreme libertarian views of a Ron Paul. I have to say I love the name, though, Rand Paul. That sort of captures everything.
Yeah. Indeed. Ayn Rand. The godmother of the loony right, I guess.
Right.
You know, for lack of a better word. Not, I don't mean that in a totally dismissive way. I just I disagree. You know, respectfully with them. But here we have, when Ronald Reagan came into office, about a quarter of the workforce in the United States was unionized. The private portion of the unionized workforce in the United States now is around 7%. These guys are having success. What do we do?
They definitely are having success. But then we are looking at some problems that seem intractable, like the number of uninsured in the healthcare system in America. And we start to see that there has to be a combination of private and public, for-profit and non-profit approaches to solve real problems in America. Unions have played a very important role in getting us to focus on those problems. And I think we are turning a corner right now in this campaign where we're starting to talk about the real issues that matter rather than the broad strokes of just creating deficits in order to cripple government.
Yeah, well said. Jim Roosevelt, the grandson of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Jim, thanks so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure.
Great talking with you. It's the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Tom Tancredo coming up next. Stick around, 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. More of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Hop on in and let you and me go for a ride.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Radio Row in New Hampshire, where the nation's first primary, the second big choice, we had Wyoming, third big choice opportunity here, but the second one that's getting all the publicity, the caucuses in Iowa and now the primary in New Hampshire. And sitting here with me is Tom Tancredo, the congressman from Colorado. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to join you today.
It's always great having you with us. It's been I think, a little over a year since the last time we talked. But you're here now. You dropped out of the race on 20th December.
That's correct.
And
birthday present to myself.
I thought it was a good one.
Yes, it was. It was the best birthday present I've had.
And you're here as a surrogate representative, endorser, what would the word be?
All of the above, I suppose.
For Mitt Romney.
That's correct.
And I'd like to get into your thoughts on Mitt Romney and his candidacy in just a second. But,
sure.
But first, you and I were just talking off air about how Ron Paul was excluded from the Fox debate last night.
Right.
And you know, with ABC excluding Dennis Kucinich, they at least had a threshold. They said, you know, here's eight different polls. If you hit 5% in any of them, you get to be one of the people. And they had, as a consequence of that, you know, what, eight Republicans in the debate, as I recall. Fox just appears to have said, if Roger Ailes doesn't like you, you're not on the air. I mean, what's the deal?
That's probably as good an explanation for what happened as I've ever heard, because this is the second time that Fox has done that to him. And the first time, I was still in the campaign, and I actually sent out a press release condemning Fox for not allowing him to be on that same stage. He has a message. You may not like it. Doesn't matter. I don't agree with him. You know, he's a good friend of mine, by the way. And there's something called the Liberty Caucus. I'm a member of it. We meet on Thursdays in his office. It's three or four other guys. It's great. We have a great time. But the point is, whether I agree with him or not, he's got a message that a lot of people tuned into, that he's raised a heck of a lot more money certainly than I did and other candidates. And why, on what basis do you have the right to say, well, you're not a viable candidate? That's simply untrue.
Yeah.
I think it's very discouraging. So I don't know the reason, and, you know, your explanation of it sounds as good as any to me.
Yeah, we're talking with Congressman Tom Tancredo. To some extent, arguably, last night's exclusion of Ron Paul from the Fox debates might have
the
hurt,
reverse effect.
Yeah, it might have actually hurt your candidate, Mitt Romney, in as much as it pushed more publicity to Ron Paul.
If it hurts anyone, it actually hurts Huckabee. I mean, that's...
Oh, interesting.
Sure, because...
Because
if Ron Paul beats Mike Huckabee here in New Hampshire, then that really does kind of deflate a lot of the air that's in the balloon that came out of Iowa.
Right.
And so they're the two vying for number three spot.
Right.
And so I think that, candidly, I think there's a lot of people who have similar attitudes who are supporting both Huckabee and Ron Paul, and so therefore would not be hard to say, well, in this case, you know, I mean, that, by golly, I'm voting for Ron because they did this thing.
Right.
And I think those supporters will come away from Huckabee. So I think that's the guy who takes it in the shorts.
Yeah. My take on Huckabee is that he's sort of the Pat Roberts of this cycle, that he's going to have a couple of big successes and a lot of publicity. Yeah. It'll bring a lot of the old Christian Coalition folks in for a while. And then the big boys in the Republican Party are going to pat him on the head and say, thank you very much, see you later.
It's a funny thing about, we were talking about that the other day, about how the, quote, establishment sees any of these people, and it doesn't line up like you'd think. I mean, you know, they're not behind Mitt Romney right now, and you would just assume that would be the case, because,
well,
Mitt Romney's the guy, the business guy, and the guy with a lot of money, so naturally they'd support him, but they're not supporting him.
Well, let's talk about Mitt Romney. You're here because you're endorsing, supporting, campaigning for Mitt Romney.
Yes, I am.
Willard, I think, actually, is his first name. But
I'm sorry?
Willard Romney. I don't know if the Wilford Brimley joke that I heard the other night had anything to do with that. Probably not. But in any case, why Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney has held many positions that are far more liberal than frankly, yours are.
That is absolutely true. On certain issues, he has definitely held more liberal positions than I do. But on the issue of illegal immigration, which is, of course, the motivating factor for me and the reason I ran for president, was to advance the issue, was to try to get everybody on that stage to talk about it, which we were able to do. And the difference is this. Of all the people on at least the Republican side of this presidential debate, if you listen now to their rhetoric, they all seem to be saying the right thing. They never were, for the most part. Certainly John McCain is the poster child for amnesty. He's not a child at all. He's the poster old man for amnesty. Rudy Giuliani be the poster person for sanctuary cities. Mike Huckabee would be the poster governor for sanctuary states. But now they're all talking the right talk.
Yeah.
But when Mitt Romney, and everybody can talk about flip-flopping about it, but I'll tell you, when Mitt Romney was the governor of Massachusetts, he actually vetoed the bill that would have given illegal aliens driver's licenses. He threatened to veto the bill that would have given higher ed subsidies to people who are here illegally. That was before illegal immigration was the issue du jour, and it was in Massachusetts, for heaven's sake. So I have to believe that he believes, because he did something that was contrary to the
will of his state for all practical purposes.
You know, certainly of the state legislature in Massachusetts. And that's important to me. It does mean that his rhetoric matches the record.
Congressman Tancredo, one of the reasons why there's so much pushback on immigration in the United States, not on let's call it illegal immigration rather than immigration, because I think we're all in favor of legal immigration and think of that as a good thing, but illegal immigration. One of the reasons why there's so much pushback, it seems to me, within the Republican Party, is because there are a lot of very large corporations
who give a lot of money to politicians,
yeah,
who want to have as cheap a labor force as
yeah
possible.
Yeah.
And when you can hire people who basically have no rights, and if they try to assert their rights, you can threaten them with the INS.
Yeah.
You got a cheap labor force.
Yeah, bet.
And
that's right.
How, you know, why is that conversation not happening in the Republican Party between the, you know, I mean, there's a marginal few who are kind of the racist xenophobes, and I think we can all dismiss them.
And by the way, they're on both sides of this debate.
Absolutely.
They're on both sides of the issue. I guarantee you.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are racists on both sides of this debate.
Yep, absolutely. But in within the Republican Party, the business group, and frankly, I'm surprised of Mitt Romney's position on this, because, you know, you think of him as the pro-business guy. He's the guy who's made millions and millions of dollars as a businessman. And the business faction is really more where Ronald Reagan was. I mean, Ronald, you talk about amnesty. John McCain in the debate, as I'm sure you saw, you know, I didn't propose amnesty. Reagan was the guy, and Reagan actually did give amnesty
he
in '86.
Called it a big mistake later, by the way, and it certainly was.
But how is this going to cleave the Republican Party, and what would the consequences be to the Republican Party if, for example, there was some sort of aggressive program like the many that you have suggested or endorsed over the years that would, in a very short period of time, reduce the American workforce by 10 or 11 million people and thus drive up the cost of labor in the United States. You know, in my opinion, it would strengthen the middle class.
Yeah.
But, boy, is it going to hurt a lot of the big donors to the Republican Party.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. One of the reasons why I've been unable to advance this issue past the point it is today in the Congress, because I've been in Congress for now 9 years, and believe me, I have been trying to do this for 9 years.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't an issue that I just came up with the other day.
Yeah.
It's been something that I believe was important for us to discuss even before I went into Congress. Okay, now, I have you meet two big stone walls. One is the Democratic Party that looks at this and says, this is a source of voters, buddy, legal or illegal. These are going to become our voters. Then you've got the Republican Party that says, I don't care, legal or illegal, they're going to become cheap laborers. And the two together form an almost impenetrable wall of opposition. And so the American people have to you have to get them behind this issue to overcome what is a party position in both sides. And look what happened when Hillary made that sort of
endorsing Spitzer's driver's license thing, yeah.
You know, about driver's license, yeah. Whether she agreed or didn't agree, it was all kind of crazy, but the numbers began to drop dramatically, so that the next day she had to say, sorry, I'm wrong, I'm really against it. Spitzer had to actually withdraw it. This is
right.
The Democratic side.
And his rural ratings went down to like 27%
That's
or
right.
something.
So what I'm saying, when you ask me how the Republicans are going to be affected by it, I'm going to say, you know, the same way the Democrats are. If you don't think this is an issue, go to Arizona and ask the Democrat governor of the state, Ms. Napolitano, why she signed the toughest bill in the nation. The toughest anti-illegal immigration bill in the nation, signed by a Democrat.
And yet now in the corporate press we're seeing articles about how companies in Arizona are closing up shop and moving out of state because labor is becoming more important.
Bull. They're not going anywhere.
Or more expensive.
You know what they're going to do? They're going to have to pay more money for labor.
Yeah.
Isn't that just horrible?
You know, gee,
I just can't.
What, a middle class? We can't have a middle class.
Absolutely not. What will we do without a huge population of the poor? I mean, we are importing our own poverty to a large extent.
Yeah.
We really are.
Yeah. Oddly enough, an area here where a progressive and a conservative agree. Tom Tancredo, the Democrat or the Republican of Colorado.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
I'll run on either.
There you go. Here on behalf of Mitt Romney, Congressman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Great talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
A bleeding heart independent. Tom Hartman, nationwide on AM 620 KPOJ.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty good job, isn't it, when you think about it? I mean, basically, I help people save money, don't I? Like, I tell people they can save hundreds by switching to Geico. They go to geico.com, maybe save all this money on car insurance, and the next thing you know, I'm, like, invited to their wedding or whatever. one bloke actually asked me to be his best man. Dear, oh dear. Point is, if you want loads of friends, giving away money, it's not a bad idea.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Air America Cruise, brought to you in part by ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Now that the holidays are over, you're back to work, back to the daily grind, but isn't it the perfect time to think about your next vacation? Join me on the first ever Air America Cruise. Spend 7 days sailing to the Mexican Riviera along with all your favorite Air America hosts. We set sail at the end of February, so reserve your room now. Call 800-955-7018, 800-955-7018, or visit airamericacruise.com.
Ed Schultz.
The storyline back in the middle of October looks like Hillary is going to be unbeatable.
Noon to 3.
And the question on that particular program on MSNBC is, you know, where's Barack Obama? And I said, look, he's keeping his powder dry. He's out there doing the database. He's out there energizing the young demographic that is going to be the big turnout. And lo and behold, he got it done. Can you say Oprah Winfrey?
The Ed Schultz Show.
Go ask John Edwards or Hillary Clinton today if they'd like to have Oprah Winfrey on this race.
Noon to 3, AM 620, KPOJ.
Didn't get what you wanted for the holidays? Pick out something special at Advance Auto Parts with buy one, get one free offers like Advance Auto Parts detailing wipes. Mix or match from glass, leather, cleaning, or protected. Buy one, get one free. Save $3.68. Or Advance Auto Parts total grip oil filters. Buy one, get one free. Save $2.88. Even Champion complete fuel system cleaner. Buy one, get one free. Save $6.44. We're working harder to make our stores better than the rest.
Ready in Advance.
Hurry, sale ends January 27th. See store for details.
Stunning green landscapes, ancient forests older than our nation, and clear streams filled with wild salmon are part of what makes Oregon so special. But during its final year in office, the Bush administration is planning to accelerate clear-cut logging across hundreds of thousands of acres of public land managed by the Bureau of Land Management, increasing landslide risk and harming water quality. This includes ancient forests and drinking watersheds from the Portland area to southern Oregon's Rogue River. Forests that also provide clean air and protection against global warming. But you can make a difference. The comment period for this terrible plan ends on January 11th. Please take a moment today to stand up to the Bush administration and stop them from selling off Oregon's wild forest heritage and clean water. Visit oregon.sierraclub.org to take action and send a letter to your members of Congress and the governor. Again, that address is oregon.sierraclub.org. Brought to you by the 24,000 members of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club.
Oh, hi, Jessica.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Megan there?
Sure. Follow me. The kids are in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Megan. Hey, Megan.
Yeah?
You're a total freak. God, you're ugly. And dumb. Oh, and your makeup makes you look like a tramp. Tommy Morris told me you guys made out. Everybody knows. The whole school knows. He said your breath smelled like garbage, and he almost puked. He says you're the most desperate girl he knows. And that dress is totally hideous. You look like a big fat clown. Disgusting. Oh, and by the way, nice zit.
If you wouldn't say it in person, why say it online? Delete cyberbullying. Don't write it, don't forward it. For more information, visit ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
We built the tanks and ships that saved the world in darkest throes. Back when I not just assets to be paired. When they can't just ship your job off, 'cause it's happening everywhere. That is one big union.
That's one big union. That's called the United States of America. Welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New Hampshire. The day before the New Hampshire primaries, we'll be broadcasting live tomorrow as well. And it's a wild time. a wild time. A lot of change going on. Much activity. And we're waiting for Congressman John Conyers, who's going to drop in. We have him on the line. Okay, why don't you put him up on the board here? There we go, Congressman Conyers. Welcome to the program.
Tom Hartman, the man of the year.
Well, Congressman Conyers, you are truly one of my heroes. The congressman from Michigan, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. First of all, you had something you wanted to talk about today.
Well, I want to talk to everybody in this country that I know that's in New Hampshire to get on the case and let's get this real agent for change that's running for president, Barack Obama, let him win the second major presidential primary in a row.
So you're endorsing Barack Obama?
I have. I've been supporting him for a while.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy, and it is just extraordinary, the wave of support echoing across the United States for him. You look at these polls. What is it about his positions that most excites you, Congressman Conyers?
Well, first of all, he's reaching out. This guy wants to do things differently than the old way, and I think he signals change. And everybody's talking change now since people are buying it. And we've finally gotten beyond the color of somebody's skin running for president. And Jesse Jackson and Shirley Chisholm and others did a lot to get us there.
Mm-hmm.
But the big idea is the big idea is that we're now in a new kind of contest in 2008, which it didn't look like it was going to be that. At first, it looked like he'd be making a great statement, and it's a wonderful progress that's been made. But now, Tom, people are all over the country thinking about, let's give a new guy, a smart guy, a honestly committed guy a chance.
Right, regardless of race or et cetera. Yeah, absolutely. Congressman Conyers, as chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, you are engaged in a variety of investigations into possible crimes and high misdemeanors of the Bush administration and the Republican Party in general. I'm wondering, what's the status of these? Where are you at? What are the ones that you're most encouraged by, and what are the ones that you're most, where you're confronting the greatest problems?
Well, I don't have such a list right now, Mr. Hartman, but I can tell you this, is that we're going to document all the problematic areas and bring as much evidence as we can to bear so nobody, Obama or anybody else succeeding this administration, will think that for some reason we might have rationalized some of these national security letters, the signing statements, the warrantless wiretaps, the torture, the rendition.
Congressman, Bill Clinton made the decision when he became president to not pursue the Iran-Contra charges against George Herbert Walker Bush and the Reagan administration. Many of us think that was a terrible mistake, broke the rule of law, essentially. Do you think that the next president should continue to pursue possibly criminal charges against people who are currently in power in the White House?
I think it turns on we can produce and make the case, and I think a case can be made. We know that there are a number of federal criminal provisions that appear to have been violated. Now, we can't be judge and jury just as we start out on this, but we're documenting a study, what we call, Tom, the imperial presidency, that includes a wide gamut of things. And what we're saying is that they should be followed through. They should not end as they did under the Clinton administration by just saying, well, we're going to move on from here.
Yeah.
I think these are frankly more serious and more problematic and will require a great deal of careful scrutiny, but we're not sweeping them under the rug, and we're not going to, if we can, let any Department of Justice or new administration do the same.
Good on you, sir. We have just about a half a minute here before we have to wrap this up at the top of the hour. Have you talked with Senator Barack Obama, who you are here to endorse and support, about this issue, about whether, if as president, he would continue these investigations?
No, I haven't talked to him about it. It's a long list of things I've got to talk with him about, including universal health care, mm-hmm. how we end the problems of the slums and ghettos and barrios, the housing situation, how we move to a full employment society, and most importantly, how we end this notion of a permanent war that they have carefully insinuated this country into.
Yeah, it's been a very destructive thing. Congressman John Conyers, one of my heroes, one of the finest men in the United States Congress, the Democrat from Michigan. Sir, thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm going to work harder than ever because of those compliments.
Thank you, Congressman. Great talking with you. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to AM 620 KTOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide. 9 to noon, AM 620 KTOJ and 620KTOJ.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New Hampshire on the Radio Row, organized by Talkers Magazine and TalkRadioNews.com, our good friends. Talk Radio News Service. There you go. Susie, I see you looking up above me. I thought, oh, what am I missing here? Talk Radio News Service. And Susie Turnbull is with us. Susie is the vice chair of the Democratic Party. You work with Howard Dean and make that thing run, and you've been on our program many times, and it's great to have you back with us. Susie, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, Tom. Pretty exciting.
It is. It is just an absolutely wild and crazy time. I was sitting in the hotel where I'm staying, in the lobby, waiting for my ride to pick me up this morning, and there were a couple of locals, as far as I could tell. There's a lot of locals who have become kind of mini celebrities. They're like professional, let me interview you on TV as a local person, you know. And there were a couple of them sitting there in the lobby and talking among themselves, and they were going, you know, these Democrats, they're all brainwashed. They all want socialized medicine. That's all they ever want. They just want socialized medicine. You know, I'd probably vote for a Democrat this year. I'm so sick and tired of these Republicans if it wasn't for all this socialism.
Frankly,
I wanted to go over to the guy and say, you know, are you opposed to your socialized fire department? Do you not like your socialized police department? But you don't get pick fights with
right,
with locals
exactly,
in New Hampshire.
Exactly.
But of course, nobody is actually proposing socialized medicine, to the best of my knowledge, among any of the Democratic candidates. What's the state of things with the Democratic Party and with this whole process?
The state of things with the Democratic Party is we are riding a wave right now, I think. I can't tell you how great it was to come out of Iowa, where we had doubled the participation from 4 years ago. That's unbelievable.
And any sense of how many of those were actually in-state people as opposed to people who came in from out-of-state?
No, these are the people who actually participated in the caucus.
Right, I know, but you could walk up the day of the caucus and say, hi, here I am, and sign in. It was an honor system.
Yeah, and I don't think that there's any... people aren't really concerned about that from the standpoint that the caucuses are primarily neighborhood caucuses.
So this was genuine.
So these are genuine.
Explosion in Iowa.
An explosion in Iowa, and they're predicting the same kind of explosion up here in New Hampshire, where more people are going to vote for the first time than ever before, and that are actually participating in the primary. The other thing, what's so fascinating up here in New Hampshire, is that people, the independents are approximately 40% of the electorate.
Right.
And everyone, every person out there believes that they're going to be voting Democratic. They certainly did in Iowa, where it was 2-1 on our participation over the Republican participation. And you have to remember, Iowa is a state that is a swing state. It went slimly for George Bush in 2004. But if you get another 125,000 people who are voting with your primary,
Iowa just became a blue state.
Yep, Iowa became a blue state. There's a blue governor, Chet Culver, and I think we're going to see that kind of stuff moving forward.
Yeah. Barack Obama, John Edwards, the two of them received a good majority of the vote, shall we say, in the caucuses, and it looks like probably...
Actually, I don't think that's true. I think that Hillary and Obama split the new influx.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's, you know, I wasn't setting up a question of them versus Hillary.
Right.
Where I wanted to go with that was that Barack Obama and John Edwards, to a very large extent, and Hillary Clinton to a somewhat less extent, but still, all three of these major contenders, are talking explicitly about, in many cases, very progressive positions that 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, certainly during the time of Reagan's presidency, had just kind of gone by the wayside. You know, we'd kind of forgotten about the New Deal after 1980. Do you see, to what extent is this going to affect, we've got, as I recall, 12 Democrats, 21 Republicans up for grabs in the Senate. You've got every single seat in the House of Representatives up for grabs this time. To what extent is the reawakening of the New Deal mentality, whether you want to call it progressivism or liberalism or whatever, to what extent is that going to be affecting all these other races that are happening around the country, since we're seeing such evidence of that at the national level?
You know, John, Tom, I think that, in fact, it may not be as much ideological right, left, progressive, conservative. I think it is more a way of doing business, that people want something different. I think they've been flabbergasted that the president vetoed child health.
Yeah.
That they've been flat, you know, which was a program that he had embraced. It was the same thing goes for No Child Left Behind in school. Education was supposedly the president's program. It turns out that it's been
a disaster.
Totally mishandled.
Although his brother's making a lot of money on it. His brother Neil, you know, with his little education company that his mother gave $30,000 to for Katrina, if only it went to Neil. And pardon my interrupting.
Yes. And just the simple incompetence and corruption.
Yeah.
And I think those were the kinds of things that people were upset about, and that the change that people are looking forward to is really a new way of doing business. That's what all of our candidates are talking about, the Democratic candidates, and the Republicans are sort of like jumping in, like, me too, me too.
Mm-hmm.
The fight over whether or not George Bush had a bunker mentality that the Republicans are talking about.
Right.
Basically, anyone in their right mind goes, yes, he had a bunker mentality. Yeah. Yes, this is crazy.
And the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yes, they're fighting over this. They're fighting over Mike Huckabee proposing a quote-unquote fair tax, which would totally hurt.
Totally whack the middle class.
Whack the middle class. Totally whack the middle class. So I think basically people are out there going, wait a second, time out. It's time for change.
Yeah.
And that I think it will also, for our House and Senate candidates, it will help the Democratic House and Senate, because they're going to be riding that wave with our candidate. And we're all in it together. The other thing that I think is really important is that all of the campaigns that are being successful, they're being successful because it's a one-on-one connection. People are engaged in the process. People are talking to their friends. That's how you got...
It's much like the old Dean campaign.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Yeah. What has happened, and I think where the success in Iowa really came from, everybody learned that you wanted to be part of Iowa, and you needed the support to be coming from Iowans.
Right.
And I think that that's been a tremendous thing.
I was 13 years old when John Kennedy was assassinated. And I, you know, so many of our listeners don't remember John Kennedy as a president. But, you know, he was, what, 42 when he was elected president? 43, something like that? I think he was younger than Barack Obama is right now.
42.
And he brought a lot of young people into the political process who, frankly, had not been there. Eisenhower had been, you know, he was kind of an old guy, you know, and Nixon was viewed as the old guy. Barack Obama is clearly bringing a lot of young people into the process. What kind of staying power is there? Is this a sea change? Is this a new transformation? Are we seeing, I don't want to go to cliches like, you know, the 60s are back kind of thing, or youth power is once again. And yet at the same time, it seems that there is some element of that young people are finally waking up. We've all been sitting around, people of your and my generation have been sitting around going, kind of bemoaning, you know, where did the young people go? They're back.
Yeah, and they're absolutely back. And one of the things that's been incredible is our research has always shown us that in the 2006 election, their being back, their coming back, made the difference.
Yeah.
And was a change. Once someone votes for the same political party in two elections, they sort of, that's where they found their home.
Right.
And so our view is that this is going to be a sea change election.
A generational change.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that the people who are the young people today are the ones who grew up when they got, some of them got their political sophistication when Bill Clinton was president and others with George Bush. And they learn and they've got requirements in their schools to do service. And they see the mess that we're in today, those who are the younger ones.
So they saw the good of the Clinton administration. They've seen the disaster of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
You know, gee, this isn't rocket science.
I mean, they saw Katrina.
Yeah.
They saw response. They saw the different ways to handle things. And I think they're with us. And I think they should be with us because it's going to be a new world.
Yeah. Susie Turnbull, the vice chair. Vice Chair, that, your official title, of the Democratic National Committee, or Democratic Party, really.
Yep.
Susie, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
It's always great talking with you.
You too.
One of my favorite people. Thanks so much. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
We're talking with Paul Dow from Timeshares Only. Paul, I hear you've just come out with this great new kit that you're giving away?
Yeah, it's called The Top 10 Secrets to Buying and Selling Timeshares, and it's just a phenomenal resource for anybody looking to sell their timeshare.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, first of all, it tells you what your timeshare is really worth.
Uh-huh.
And more importantly, how to sell it for top dollar. Well, there are thousands of people out there just waiting to buy your timeshare, but you sort of need to learn the secrets to getting the most cash for it.
And the kit is free.
Yes, but it's only a limited time offer, so you need to call our toll-free number now, and we'll rush it right up.
Well, sounds like a pretty sweet thing for really anybody who owns a timeshare.
It really is. It could make you thousands of dollars.
Well, okay, the top 10 secrets to buying and selling timeshares. Here's the phone number to call. It's 1-800-514-4750. Again, that's 1-800-514-4750. 1-800-514-4750.
One loud, proud progressive.
Looking at the things that George Bush has done over the last 6 years and comparing it to the things that dictators of the 20th century had done.
Randy Rhodes, 3 to 7.
You know, Germany was a parliamentary democracy. We know that Hitler was elected chancellor. The same parallel steps that these dictators had taken in order to gain control over these democracies.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
And the steps that Bush has been taking. And they're identical.
3 to 6. AM 620. KPOJ. Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
See the 2008 Portland International Auto Show at the Convention Center January 24th through 27th. To kick off the auto show and win prizes, come to Cedar Hills Crossing Saturday, January 19th from noon to 4 and represent KPOJ in the best car racing game ever created, Gran Turismo by PS2. More info at cedarhillcrossing.com. Don't miss the Brides Against Breast Cancer Tour of Gowns January 18th through 20th at the Lloyd Center Doubletree Hotel. Find a wedding gown of your dreams at incredible savings and help grant wishes for men and women diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. Details at 620kpoj.com, keyword brides. Win a class of your choice at a Phoenix Workshop. Class sizes are small, schedules are flexible, and you get plain language instruction. Whether you want to do cool things on the web, design a logo, newsletter, or spreadsheet, or save money by maintaining your already live website, log on to 620kpoj.com, keyword contest, and enter to win today.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.
Didn't get what you wanted for the holidays? Pick out something special at Advance Auto Parts with buy one, get one free offers like Advance Auto Parts detailing wipes. Mix or match from glass, leather, cleaning, or protect. Buy one, get one free. Save $3.68. Or Advance Auto Parts total grip oil filters. Buy one, get one free. Save $2.88. Even Champion complete fuel system cleaner. Buy one, get one free. Save $6.44. We're working harder to make our stores better than the rest.
Ready in advance.
Hurry, sale ends January 27th. See store for details.
And now for the bonus round. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. What does a pear prevent?
Hard feelings.
Correct. If you multiply
the square root of 19.
Correct. How many movies has Netflix delivered so far?
I know. Over 1 billion.
Correct.
Yes.
Netflix. Over 1 billion movies delivered so far. Zero late fees. Choose movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Start your free trial. Plans now from only $4.99 a month. Netflix. It's that easy.
What are you doing in the next 15 minutes? You could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. All it takes is a quick visit to GEICO.com or a quick call, 1-800-947-AUTO.
According to Certification Magazine, a network manager earns $72,000 a year. PCC's Computer Ed program provides industry-recognized training in Cisco, CompTIA, and Microsoft. New classes start every week, so register now at computers.pcc.edu.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
The days when anything goes, I'll tell you, change is in the air. 21 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. And somebody who would dispute that is with me, Ian Bernard. Ian Bernard is with us. He's with freetalklive.com, a fellow talk show host. And avowed supporter, Ron Paul. Hey, Ian.
Most certainly. How are you?
I am just absolutely great, but I'll get better. Glad to have you with us.
Excellent.
Why Ron Paul?
Well, as a longtime libertarian, Ron Paul, of course, ran in 1988 on the libertarian ticket, and now he's running again as a Republican. But he's got all of his libertarian street cred, if you will, and so, I mean, it's an easy choice. There's no one else in the Republican or Democratic races that supports liberty.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys, one of the ways that you define liberty is the free market.
That's my favorite definition.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Essentially,
what is a free market?
Well, the idea would be to remove coercion from our lives, to interact with one another on a more voluntary basis, instead of trying to force people to do things the way you want them to, or force them to not do things the way you think they shouldn't do them. Basically,
I think most people would probably agree with that. Let me set up a metaphor, analogy, whatever. I don't know what you call it, a situation. I need health care. The free market, because there is no government interference, has allowed one corporation, one giant monopoly, to essentially run all of its competitors out of business. There's one company left. That company tells me that they don't want to give me health care because I have a pre-existing condition. How is that not coercion?
Well, first of all, there are two types of monopolies. There's a coercive monopoly, and then there's a market monopoly. Now, when you deal with the concept of a coercive monopoly, in that the idea is that you're forced to deal with this one business. You can't go anywhere else. There's no other choices. Usually when you see coercive monopolies, you see them in this current situation we have today, this mixed economy with tremendous government regulation, political favoritism, corporations with executives scratching the politicians' backs, the politicians scratching their buddies' backs, and the corporations. So some real-life examples of these monopolies would be your power company, would be probably your water
Power companies are natural monopolies. I can
only have one set of wires coming into my house.
Not true, actually.
I can, well, arguably. I mean, you know, if you wanted to say that the wires themselves were a public utility,
they usually have to.
But that wouldn't be your free market.
Power companies being a monopoly usually has more to do with political favoritism than anything else. It's usually a county government saying, "Okay, this is going to be our power source."
When I lived in Vermont, we had Verizon was the main provider, and there's a company called Sovernet, a local Vermont company, and they were offering great telephone service. I had it, you know, $25 a month. You call up the guy lived a couple blocks, the service guy away from us. You know, he'd come over in the afternoon, middle of the night, whatever. The Verizon asserted that because they owned the copper, they owned the wires that mm-hmm. came into my home, that Sovernet had no right to them, period. That's your free market.
No, it's not. It's, once again, the government granting Verizon that privilege of being the one company
Verizon
to
put
run
the wires
there. Well, okay, then another company should be able to come in and run those wires, but usually what you have is a government saying, no, we've got enough wires here, we're not going to allow you to run any more wires. That's usually what you have. So when you have a coercive monopoly, it's usually backed up by government saying, you must use this service. A market monopoly, the second type of monopoly, is the one you're talking about, where you have this free market, and there's only one company. Well, the only way you could get to that point without government saying, no, you can't enter into this business, the only way you could get to that point would be if that one company provided the best possible service in the marketplace, because you said they bought up all their competition and all
so
that.
So Microsoft is the best company out there?
No, not at all. And Microsoft isn't a market monopoly because it has
the European think they are.
I don't know what's going on in Europe, but I know that here there's Apple and there's Linux and there are a variety of other choices. In fact, Linux is number one in the business world for computing. So Microsoft, they're not even close.
Yeah.
So you can't get to that point in the marketplace without excellent customer service and great prices. And if they get to that point, then they get lazy and they start being
the marketplace. The market, in quotes, mm-hmm. exists on the substructure of government. I think you would have to acknowledge that.
The marketplace.
Okay, how do you enforce a contract?
Well, that's an excellent idea. Basically, the idea would be to
without law.
Well, you would have what would essentially be private property, and then private property owners could set whatever rules they wanted.
But who defines what's private property?
That's a good question, too. You'd have essentially
title
insurance.
It would have
insurance.
To be we the people.
You would have you could have title insurance companies. You could also have contract insurance companies as well.
But at the end of the day, when there's a dispute and you say this is yours and I say this is mine, who's going to be resolving
that dispute?
We
would take that to an arbitrator. We would take that to a third-party arbitrator instead of the government.
So you're creating a private government then?
No. There's no government here. Government is a concept that involves a coercive monopoly over force, basically. What we're talking about is a marketization of
government services. Okay, so if we go to an arbitrator and I say, I didn't like the outcome, I'm going to ignore it.
Well, you can actually appeal to more arbitrators. It's a great thing about bringing the marketplace into the justice system.
So ultimately, there is no force, and so ultimately, if somebody wants to be completely predatory in the marketplace, there's nothing to stop them
in
your world.
There's defensive force. There's defensive force, and it's the initiation of force that libertarians object to. So if you have a problem, if there's somebody that's initiating force on you, you absolutely have the right to defend yourself.
With what?
Well, with force.
Against an insurance company, I take a gun in there?
Well, with an insurance company, if you've got the right, if your claim is correct, take it to arbitration, you'll win, and you'll get an incredible settlement.
But not if the insurance company says, hey, there's no force, I don't have to do it. We'll have to continue another time. Ian Bernard, freetalklive.com.
Thanks, Tom.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Standing up for freedom, Tom Hartman, nationwide on AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Four minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New Hampshire from Radio Row, put on by the Talk Radio News Service and Talkers Magazine. The day before, the day of the primary is this wild and crazy stuff going on. And with me now, Kelly Clark, the state director, and Lance Kilpatrick, the New Hampshire campaign coordinator for the DividedWeFail.org, or DividedWeFail, I guess is the organization, program, campaign. What would you call it? Lance?
Yeah, call it an initiative.
Initiative.
Really.
Initiative. Okay, great. Now, this is a coalition, AARP, the Business Roundtable, the NFIB. What is NFIB?
National Federation of Independent Business.
And SEIU, the union, the Service Employees International Union. And Lance and Kelly, when you talk, you're going to have to get just a little closer to the mic. So you call this an initiative. What is it?
Well, basically, approximately a year ago now, the CEOs of AARP, the Business Roundtable and SEIU, Andy Stern, got together. They've all been lamenting the fact that whatever they try to do within Congress and many times in the state legislature on health care or financial security issues, whether they be pension reform, Social Security, things like that, it always ends up in partisan gridlock. It always ends up being about scoring political points and not actually getting to solutions to these problems that everybody acknowledges are problems that need to be solved. And so the CEOs got together and said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we actually formed an effort together, this strange bedfellows type of thing, because Lord knows SEIU and NFIB being together on the same page or on any effort is highly unusual. We could really make a difference with our combined membership, over 55 million members combining amongst all the organizations, all of our firepower and our ability to reach out across the country and deliver a message to make these the number one domestic issues, healthcare and financial security. We really could make a difference. And so that's how Divided We Fail was born.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, you're the state director here of Divided We Fail. AARP is arguably one of the nation's largest health insurance companies. Most of the revenue for AARP comes from providing health insurance. The Business Roundtable, the CEOs of the 100 largest corporations in America, as I recall, it's 100. John Snow used to be the chairman of it, our Secretary of Treasury. NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, is another business group. SEIU really seems like the odd man out in this. Would I be wrong in suggesting that it looks to me, or it's from the outside, like this is an attempt by business to make sure that health care and financial security, specifically Medicare and Social Security, don't end up in the hands of the government and stay in the hands of private enterprise?
I would say not. I think if you look at the fact that AARP represents one of the largest consumer groups, representing a consumer perspective, SEIU, one of the largest labor organizations representing labor across the country. So I think there's some equal balance there. And the message is really these are strange bedfellows that have come together, often on the opposite aisle, on issues, and they're raising visibility about the fact that this is a critical issue, whether you're a consumer, you're a member of a union, working for a business, or an employer. These are critical issues that need to be addressed, and that's the message they're all trying to send.
I think we all agree they're critical issues that need to be addressed. You know, Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama, and John Edwards, Dennis Kucinich, they would all say the same thing. The devil's in the details. How do we address them? Are you folks putting forward specific policy proposals, Lance Kilpatrick?
No, we actually are not at this point in time, and that's because the climate for actually achieving solutions at this point in time is so tainted with partisanship and point scoring that we're not going to be able to get anything done. So what we're trying to do is create an environment where essentially whoever becomes the new president, whoever's the new members of Congress, new governors, et cetera, recognize that the will and the effort to have to sit down at the table and hammer out solutions on these issues is the prevailing way to go, that it can't just be about putting out a policy proposal that will be recognized and everybody says hurrah, and then it disappears as you get into bickering and scoring points back and forth. We're trying to create a system where we're not there.
We already have, though, a system, a mechanism for working out things like these issues. It's called the United States Congress.
That's right, and obviously Congress has not risen to the level where they need to over the years to get the solutions done. So what we're trying to do is create the environment where that a congressional representative, regardless of political affiliation, says, you know what, I can't go and just say this is the line in the sand that we have and it's our way or the highway. We actually have to sit down, make tough choices, recognize that we're not going to be able to win 100% of what we want for our issue, but that getting to a point of compromise to actually get something that's going to help the American people is the alternative that has to be pursued as opposed to the status quo. The status quo is untenable.
I don't disagree that the status quo is untenable. The word compromise, I mean, if we have Congress, which is answerable to we the people, why then create an institution? The Business Roundtable is definitely not answerable to we the people. Corporations in the United States are not democratic institutions. They're kingdoms. The National Federation of Independent Businesses is not representative of we the people. It's representative of corporations. You know, I own a corporation. I get to say, right? I can hire and fire. I can do whatever I want. It's a kingdom. You have basically two kingdom representing organizations. You got AARP that supported the donut hole in the Medicare legislation because it would make them a lot of money. So they've got a history of supporting things that are going to make more money for AARP and basically, in my opinion, screw the rest of us. And SEIU, I've had Andy Stern on the program before, and I can't figure out why he's so in love with corporate America. I don't get it. Why not just, you know, what's wrong with pushing for Congress, you know, who has to, every 2 years, the House of Representatives has to answer to us, to saying to Congress, you know, okay, we're going to get out of this rather than into this, we being these two large corporate entities, this big insurance company and this big union. We're going to get out of this rather than into this, and we want Congress to work something out. Or is that what you're saying?
No, actually, let me push back a little bit on the fact that...
Push back a lot.
You know, here in New Hampshire, we've been running this campaign for about a year now. The people we talk to are not just folks who have problems with their health insurance, whether they be cancer survivors or, you know, they're having problems paying for their prescription drugs, things like that. We talk to a lot of small business owners, many of them who are being frequented by folks here at the Radisson just down the street and everything, who are struggling with trying to figure out how to pay benefits for their employees. And it becomes a situation where they are having to make another untenable choice. Can I offer benefits to my employees, or can I make, you know, actually grow a couple jobs, you know, go from 6 people to 8 people in the restaurant, so you're actually providing jobs. And they are facing that choice of, I don't know how to be able to do both because healthcare costs are so extreme, benefit costs are so extreme, I can't do that.
Right. And so, why not just go to if Medicare runs on a 2%, 3% overhead, the United Healthcare, which is the second largest health insurance company in the United States and the main partner with AARP, their CEO William McGuire took a $1.78 billion compensation package, billion with a B. Instead of going with AARP's partners, why don't we just say Medicare for all?
Well,
there'd be more than enough money for everybody.
If there was, I mean, you look at where the presidential campaigns are right now on both Republicans and Democrats, and you see from all the candidates, with the exception of Congressman Kucinich, who is, you know, Lord knows he's right there and trying to make health care a number one domestic issue, and we greatly appreciate that. But there has to be political will and viability to do something like that, and that's just not here in this country right now. So here's what I would posit. You know, we can't wait another 20, 30 years for maybe or maybe not the country to get to a point where we can have a Medicare for all situation. We've got problems right now. We've got 47 million people uninsured.
But AARP fights against Medicare for all. The Business Roundtable fights against Medicare for all.
That's not true. I'm not going to speak for the Business Roundtable.
Yeah.
AARP fights for health insurance coverage for its members and for the public at large. How we get there.
Yeah, that's their revenue.
How we get there, we don't care. We want to make it affordable and accessible for all folks.
Kelly Clark, the state director, you keep wanting to jump in here.
Yeah, I just wanted to really reinforce. I think we know that historically, Congress has not been able to successfully address these issues. And
right, ever since 47, when Harry Truman proposed Medicare for All, and the Republicans shot it down.
And so this is an effort to begin to have with these organizations coming together and really pressuring Congress to act on these issues and to gain the awareness and the priority of moving these things forward in a way that's never been done before. And we believe that having these voices working together and the range of solutions is broad, and we're not at a point about talking about solutions but raising the awareness so we can get the right people at the table to move a solution forward.
Why would I be wrong in being suspicious? that when the conversation that when the conversation gets down to the details, if these four organizations got their foot in the door as the main proponents, that now their solutions are really going to be the only ones that are discussed?
Well, I think that we're ways away from being at the solution discussion. However, it is going to take a lot of compromise on all sides to find a middle ground that we can actually get something accomplished, because it's been so difficult because there's so many special interests involved.
Right, so why not just get them out of there?
That hasn't worked in the past.
Yeah, well, that's true. Kelly Clark, Lance Kilpatrick, the DividedWeFail.org is the website, the Divided We Fail platform. You can read all about it over at DividedWeFail.org. Thank you both for coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
It's great talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here on Air America. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked great.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
I looked at her and it's like I'm looking at a picture of my wife from 20 years ago. It's incredible.
How are ordinary women across America looking years younger? They've discovered the clinically proven breakthrough called hydroxytone. It erases wrinkles, tightens skin, and makes frown lines disappear from view. See for yourself by requesting a free trial of hydroxytone today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in the VIP gift bags at this year's Sundance Film Festival. And now you can experience them for yourself. Try hydroxytone risk-free and shed years from your appearance faster than you thought possible.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Turn back the clock with the free trial of hydroxytone. For your free trial, call 1-800-644-1409. That's 1-800-644-1409. 1-800-644-1409.
She's smart. She's cool. You gotta love her.
Please, can we stop saying mission accomplished, yay we win? It's embarrassing.
Rachel Maddow.
If you guys declaring victory over Al-Qaeda means that our troops can come home now, then knock yourself out.
She's unfiltered.
Declare victory over Al-Qaeda, declare victory over cancer and poverty while you're at it.
It's the Rachel Maddow Show.
If that's what you need to say in order to get us out of Iraq, say it.
Evenings, 6 to 8 on AM 620 KTOJ. Streaming at 620KTOJ.com.
This is the Mortgage Moment, and I'm here with Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity Mortgage. Hayes, why is the Fed's third rate cut in a row dominating the news?
Because the Fed just sent in the cavalry and blasted mortgage rates through the floor. This is a monumental opportunity for homeowners to reduce their monthly payments and wipe out debt.
So is this triggering a refinancing frenzy?
Absolutely. Now's a crucial moment for savvy homeowners to jump off the sidelines and lock in fixed rates as low as 5.8% with an APR of 5.9.
Okay, but when does this window of opportunity disappear?
It could literally be gone tomorrow. The economy is changing so rapidly, you can't afford not to make one 5-minute call and take action right now. Listen, you can refinance at this pivotal time with zero out-of-pocket expenses, and I'm so confident we can help you, I'll even pay for your home to be appraised. Paramount Equity is the Oregon company committed to saving our neighbors money. Call 718-1000 today. 503-718-1000.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
I looked at her and it's like I'm looking at a picture of my wife from 20 years ago. It's incredible.
How are ordinary women across America looking years younger? They've discovered the proven breakthrough called hydroxytone. It erases wrinkles, tightens skin, and makes frown lines disappear from view. See for yourself by requesting a free trial of hydroxytone today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in the VIP gift bags at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Try hydroxytone risk-free and shed years from your appearance faster than you thought possible.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-700-1903. But hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-700-1903. 1903 1-800-700-1903.
A house divided against itself cannot stand. All men,
are created equal.
Discover a fascinating American leader at the Oregon Historical Society's newest exhibit, A House Divided, Lincoln in His Own Words. From Honest Abe to Civil War President to Victim of Assassination, explore rare artifacts, including a signed copy of the Emancipation Proclamation, and experience Oregon's unique history with the award-winning Oregon My Oregon exhibit. Learn more at OHS.org.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire.
I went to school in Nashville. My buddy was in rehab with Johnny Cash.
I fell into a ring of fire.
Tough one.
Yeah, Johnny Cash there. Mark Clark on the line with us. He is, and welcome back to the program, by the way, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Mark Clark, a physician's assistant and a member, a state representative, member of the New Hampshire House of Representatives, a Republican. You identify yourself as a Republican libertarian, Mark. Why is it that I'm hearing so many Republicans these days say, well, I'm not really a Republican, I'm really a libertarian?
Because we want freedom from government.
And you don't think that the Republican Party has been offering that?
No.
I see. Okay. And yet, you're here to endorse and support Fred Thompson.
That's right.
Why Fred Thompson instead of Ron Paul?
Because he wants to give us state rights, and I think he could get it actually accomplished.
Now, states' rights from the end of the Civil War until... you know, arguably 10, 15 years ago, was a euphemism for the ability to fight integration. What do states' rights mean now?
The right to do things differently than the federal government tells us to do things. We're all different states. Specifically, how to educate our children, how to spend our tax dollars, you know, the simplest aspect, everything that we get from the federal government is tied to there, you'll get this money if you do this, you'll do this if you do that.
Right, but they're not mandates. They're if you do. Right, and there's a little bit of difference there in that if you don't do, then you don't get it. That's okay. You don't want it.
But we need the money.
Yeah. Well, see, there's the thing. I mean, you know, it's not federal highway funds, for example. You have to have a speed limit of, I think it's 70 now nationwide.
That's right.
If you don't have a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit, you don't get federal highway funds. That's not a mandate.
No, but they got you. And, you know, like here in New Hampshire, we don't want a seatbelt law. And they've been threatening to take away our funds. But
your federal highway funds.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you didn't have a seatbelt law, you'd have more people who are ending up in emergency rooms who are uninsured. And Fred Thompson is opposed to national health insurance or any variation thereof. Who's going to pay the bill of all those people?
Right now, we're all paying for it anyway, and
no, but without the seatbelt law, you'd have even more of them.
In my opinion, you know, because I actually practice medicine, seatbelts don't always stop the injuries. They sometimes can get in the way.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're talking with Mark Clark. He's a state representative, a Republican here in New Hampshire. I'm curious that here in New Hampshire, the Republican who ran your program to slam the phone banks against Gene Shaheen back 6 years ago, five years ago and change.
Yeah, I know him. I'm a friend of his. So.
Yeah. He's written a book. In fact, he's going to be a guest on our program next week called Confessions of a Republican Operative. The guy who went to jail, talking about. I don't recall his name right off the top of my head.
Yeah, me neither.
And basically, he said that, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but, you know, it looks like that election might have been, you know, John Sununu won that election, shall we say, a little less than fairly. Not to say it was stolen, but...
I think he's trying to sell books, though.
Yeah, well, sure. But at the time, he was slamming the phone bank so that the union couldn't get Democratic voters out. You know, dirty tricks are...
not good.
Yeah. What's the deal with the Republican Party here in New Hampshire? Are they going to disavow this? I mean, we're already seeing push
polls. They have. It's just that what's going on is that the Democratic Party in the state hasn't let this go. I mean, they bring it up every time you turn around.
Well, wouldn't you if an election got stolen from you?
Well,
I don't think it's that way. I mean, my opinion is that the election has been stolen from us by allowing students who don't really live in New Hampshire, who have not been residents of the state, vote. And, you know, you cannot win an election if you're a Republican in certain towns in the state because they register just about any. It's very easy to screw an election up here in the state. And I'm just for fairness, and I don't agree with what that guy did. That was wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think we can agree on that. So you think out-of-state students. Again, back to Fred Thompson, because I know that's why you're here and what you wanted to talk about. Fred Thompson, to the best of my knowledge, has not laid out any specific policy proposals, or am I missing something? Because I've been hearing about all the things he's opposed to. I haven't heard what he's in favor of.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's very specific on his policies. But
pick,
the media
pick one.
All right, let's talk about, he's pro-life, and he pretty much says that he's going to send it back to the states. He's not going to have a national thing to outlaw abortion.
So he's pro-life, but he's not going to outlaw abortion?
No.
I think a lot of pro-lifers would say those two positions don't reconcile. You're trying to have it both ways.
Well, it's because the state's rights issue. It's that every state needs to decide what's right for them.
So how can he be pro-life, which by and large is a euphemism for criminalizing abortions,
right,
and still say, but it's fine with me if California decides that abortions are legal?
He's not saying it's fine with him. He's just saying that it's up to them to make their decision because they have the right as a state.
Right. Interesting. What are a few other positions?
Gay marriage, same thing. He's not going to have a national mandate to outlaw gay marriage. He's going to say that basically, if Massachusetts wants gay marriage, they can have it as a state.
Mm-hmm. And other positions?
He wants to really shrink the federal government.
I was just going to say, all of this kind of seems to me like getting down to the position of, okay, why have a federal government? Is the bottom line basically a libertarian bottom line of the federal government really should only be here to defend us, armies and police, and that's it? And therefore, again, why not Ron Paul? He's the guy who...
Yeah, that's what the Constitution says. So, yeah, I think that, you can see that. I don't agree with Ron Paul on his foreign policy. So.
So you're in favor of foreign wars?
Not necessarily.
But you're in
protecting America.
You're in favor of this war, the ongoing occupation of Iraq, and Fred Thompson.
I think that has to end at some point too.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, Mark Clark, PA. He is a representative, state representative here in the state of New Hampshire, Republican in the New Hampshire House, here to support Fred Thompson. Mark, thanks a lot for coming on and having talking with us. Good talk.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman broadcasting live from Radio Row here in New Hampshire, where the primary is going to be happening tomorrow. We'll be right back. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide. 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New Hampshire from Radio Row, the site of the nation's first primary, the second big event, the caucuses in Iowa. Of course, not a primary. A caucus is put on by the parties. This put on by the state, where people actually vote as opposed to caucusing. And it's going to happen tomorrow. Should be interesting. In the meantime, there's a lot of interesting things happening, interesting, perhaps, frankly, concerning things happening in the news. We're seeing this whole story of a serious provocation by Iranians of U.S. warships in what is being called a serious provocation. Iranian Revolutionary Guard boats harassed and provoked three U.S. Navy ships in the strategic Straits of Hormuz, according to Pentagon officials. According to one official, quote, five small Iranian boats were acting in a very aggressive way and causing our ships to take evasive maneuvers. There were no injuries, but there very well could have been, adding that the Iranian boats turned away, quote, literally at the very moment the U.S. forces were preparing to open fire in self-defense. Whoa. The White House, we urge the Iranians to refrain from such provocative actions that could lead to a dangerous incident in the future. End of quote. And, of course, Dick Cheney on the phone to the Iranians going, hey, you should have been 20 feet closer. Come on, just 20 feet. That's all we need. Another 20 feet. Yeah, we'll see. So anyway, the one comment I wanted to share with you about the debate, the Democratic debate that I, and the Republican debate for that matter, actually even more the Republican debate that we watched, what was it, Saturday night, I guess. I'm mixing up my days here because I spent all day yesterday on an airplane. Saturday night. It has to do with the war in Iraq and what, or the occupation of Iraq. And what so got me was particularly watching the Republicans, where over and over and over again they were repeating this mantra of, we don't want to announce to the enemy the date that we're leaving. You wouldn't want to announce to the enemy the date that you're leaving. Just consider this for a minute. This really shows how incredibly out of touch with reality, with America, and with international foreign policy, and frankly, with what war means, the Republicans and some of the Democrats are. For example, during World War II, if we had said to Adolf Hitler before we launched the attack on Normandy, at Normandy, before we invaded Europe, if we had said to Adolf Hitler, well, you know, we're going to be there for 6 months, and if we don't succeed in defeating you, we're leaving. Obviously, it would have been a huge mistake. I mean, it would have been an unimaginable blunder. When you are at war with a specific country, with a specific group, you don't say, we'll fight until we decide not to fight anymore. And by the way, we're going to decide not to fight anymore 3 weeks from now or 6 months from now. But it's a completely different thing right now in Iraq. The war in Iraq ended 3 or 4 years ago. The war in Iraq ended on May 1st, 2003, when George Bush got up on the USS Abraham Lincoln and declared that the war had ended. We successfully took down the government of Iraq. Maliki is not our enemy. The Iraqi government is not the enemy. So to say to the Iraqi government, here's the point at which we're going to end the occupation and turn your country back over to you, is not saying to an enemy, this is when we're going to leave. It's saying to an ally, as we said to the Germans after World War II, as we said to the Japanese after World War II, here's the point at which your government is now your government. Oh, but we still have bases in South Korea and Germany and Japan. Yeah, you know, at their request. And we are not running their governments. We're not running their countries. We're not telling them what to do. We're not walking around in the streets of their countries and their cities armed and enforcing the law and maintaining peace. So if you want to draw a metaphor, the metaphor that the Republicans keep, or a parallel or an analogy or whatever, the one that the Republicans keep trying to draw of, this is a war and we're telling the enemy when we're going to leave, this is crazy. That is an absolute, it is completely out of touch. Maliki, al-Maliki and the government of Iraq is not our enemy. And somebody ought to be pointing that out to them. I'm just astounded that every time these guys, you know, get on their high horse and go off into some kind of a rant about how, well, you know, if we tell them that we're leaving in 6 months, we're notifying the enemy. You know, that somebody doesn't say, oh, the Iraqis are the enemy? The Iraqi government is the enemy? I didn't realize that. It boggles my mind. And that was, for me, I mean, aside from the obvious cluelessness of the Republicans and how the Republicans basically all hate each other, and, you know, the conversation we had with Susie Turnbull a little earlier, you know, aside from the obvious stuff there, that for me was the big carry-home aha that I got out of watching the debates that, you know, should have occurred to me years ago, I suppose, but anyhow, I got it. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. We're going to have guests coming and going as the day goes on here at the Radio Row. But right now we can pick up a few of your phone calls, and so we've got some people who've been on the line for a little bit here. Janice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Janice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's been a long time since I called. I listen all the time, though. I just want to say, let me gather to here. All right. I want to ask your listeners. I wanted to ask John Collingers, but he's not there. But I want to ask your listeners who support Barack Obama. Why are they giving him a pass? His voting record is the same as Hillary Clinton's, and he didn't even show up at the Iranian vote. So he's being given a pass. He's not an agent of change, and he even has lobbyists on his campaign. He scares the heck out of me. We have John Edwards, who is a guy who represents what we want to change, and that is getting money out of Washington. He should be surging. I don't understand it. And, Tom, could you once more explain why it is that people say that people pay taxes, not corporations, why that's not true?
Sure.
I'm sorry, I put it all together. It's just that I can't call very often. But I'm just really upset about the Barack Obama thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not so much that Barack Obama's getting a pass here or anywhere else, because I think that And he is not taking PAC and corporate money in this election, unlike Hillary Clinton.
But he has lobbyists on his campaign.
Yeah, a few. In defense of Barack Obama, I would say, and as I have in defense of Hillary Clinton also said, I believe that if enough of us get mobilized, if we the people are active in speaking out, that whoever we have in office is going to begin to take our positions. They're going to have to. They're going to have no choice. And I think that that's the big message that the last, arguably the last 4 years have been bringing, and it's getting louder and louder and stronger and stronger. I agree with you, though, that the true agent of change in this election on the Democratic side is John Edwards. But there's a media blackout on him because John Edwards has spoken out against the large media monopolies. And so, you know, I mean, as the USA Today article this morning, I was reading it, and as usual, you know, John Edwards virtually unmentioned. So there's that, but I don't think that the extent to which Barack Obama is winning is necessarily a reflection of John Edwards losing or Hillary Clinton for that matter losing. I think it's a relatively pure statement of what a brilliant politician Barack Obama is. The guy is an incredible campaigner. He may well be far more progressive than we know. Back in the 2000 election. And Janice, thank you so much for the call. Back in the 2000 election, Louise and I, my wife and I, had a conversation with the fellow. I don't want to identify this guy because at the time we said we wouldn't, and I'm gonna honor that. But he was the campaign manager for one of the top four Democratic candidates for president of the United States. We'll just leave it at that. And one of the ones who had the greatest probability, frankly, at that point in time, of becoming president of the United States. And he said, you know, my candidate absolutely supports single-payer health care and will put it into place as president, but can't talk about it. He said he can't say it. If he were to say it out loud right now, it would be the end of his candidacy. And so at a certain level, there's this real politic issue, and it's a tragedy in American politics, but it's real. That there are these very powerful interest groups out there, and the press, frankly, is one of them, the corporate press. And it's aligned with them. I mean, you know, look at General Electric, this giant weapons manufacturer that happens to own a network, that happens to own, you know, the major cable network that's providing a lot of news, as it were, a lot of information to Americans about politics. And, you know, there are some positions that, as I think, you know, Howard Dean frankly found out when he, on Chris Matthews' show, said he wanted to break up the big media, and all of a sudden he started getting negative. All of a sudden it was angry Howard Dean and John Edwards. Oh, it's angry John Edwards. I think there are some issues that it's just still very dangerous to tackle. So I have a lot of hope that regardless of who the nominee is, they will change America. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. The true people's radio.
Tom Hartman.
You're tuned to Tom Hartman Nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Iraq is the classic example of the shock doctrine. You had a military strategy that was called shock and awe. It was a military strategy designed to maximize disorientation.
Author Naomi Klein on the revolutionary shock doctrine she first described in the pages of The Nation.
The theory was that Iraqis would be so shocked they would be easily marshaled from point A to point B.
Ideas that reshape the political landscape often surface first in The Nation, America's widest read weekly journal of opinion. Why wait for Nation author authors like Naomi Klein to become bestsellers. Right now, you can try 4 weeks of The Nation absolutely free. Call 800-999-6863 or go to readthenation.com. Try 4 weeks of The Nation risk-free, then get 20 more weeks. That's 6 months in all for just $13.95. Or write "no thanks" on the invoice. Call 800-999-6863. 800-999-6863 or go to readthenation.com.
It's the one and only Mike Malloy.
Bush tells a broken nation is perpetual war. And how does the crack media respond the next morning? O.J. Simpson is a burglar.
Mike Malloy.
Don't you get it yet? Does Pappy Bush have to go over to Iraq and jam his bony fingers into the dirt until oil comes up for some of you people to get it?
Mike Malloy, right here on Portland's only progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Are you afraid of the IRS? Worried because you owe back taxes? Because you've neglected to file your taxes for a year or more? Or because you haven't made employee payroll deposits? If you're afraid of the IRS, relax, because you don't have to go it alone. With one easy phone call to Effector, you can find out what your tax settlement options are. You'll never have to talk to the IRS directly. See how quickly it can all be taken care of. Just call 1-800-900-1206. Effector is staffed by professionals, many of whom have actually worked for the IRS. We understand how the IRS works. Depending on your circumstances, it may be possible to drastically reduce your tax debt. For your free confidential consultation, call 1-800-900-1206. Whether you're behind in filing your taxes, paying your taxes, if you've forgotten to pay employee payroll taxes, it can be scary. You don't have to go it alone. Call Effector right now. For your free confidential consultation, call 1-800-900-1206. That's 1-800-900-1206.
Clark, why are you pulling the car over?
I need to see a man about a horse.
Ah, great. Another hold up on this miserable drive between Seattle and Portland.
What are you going to do? When nature calls. You know, Lois, this driving is really helping me realize how many of our most basic needs are taken care of when we fly the Horizon shuttle between Seattle and Portland.
Food and drink.
The tasty snacks, wines, and microbrews.
Freshly brewed Starbucks coffee.
Convenience, for crying out loud. It's a short flight on Horizon, leaving every half hour for an everyday low fare. And now that Horizon has added larger Q400s, you can get a Horizon shuttle flight just about any time.
Park, I don't think you're allowed to do this on the freeway.
Wow, friendly people.
At least face away from the traffic.
Wave, Lewis.
Don't do that.
Soar above the I-5 slog in the comfort of the Bombardier Q400, now available on many Horizon Air shuttle flights between Portland and Seattle. Check it out at horizonair.com/the slog.
What are you doing in the next 15 minutes? You could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. All it takes is a quick visit to geico.com or a quick call, 1-800-947-AUTO.
The odds of a child becoming a professional golfer? 1 in 140,000. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism, 1 in 150. To learn the signs of autism, visit autismspeaks.org.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
AM 620, KPOJ. KPOJ, now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620, KPOJ.
Better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program, brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Health, keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. And welcome back to the program. Reed Wilson? Reed Wilson is with us. I'm sorry, I don't have a card. If you have one, I'd like. Okay. Reed Wilson is with us. He is the
Associate Editor of RealClearPolitics.com.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at your website right here, Reed. My sense of it is that Real Clear Politics is basically the meeting place for the punditocracy.
We are indeed. We've got the best of all worlds. Left, right, center, best of political analysis you can find. We collect it from all over the MSM landscape and bring it all in one place. We aggregate polling, which is what everybody loves us for. You can find the latest polls, our polling averages, and up-to-the-minute state of the race.
So what is the state of the race?
The state of the race, up here in New Hampshire, we've got an increasingly widening gap, at least on the Democratic side, where Barack Obama has taken about an 8-point lead in the latest Real Clear Politics New Hampshire average. He's up about 8 points on Hillary Clinton, thanks to a bunch of polls that have come out that have really shown an Iowa bounce. On the Republican side, John McCain still continues to lead by about 6 or 7 points. It looks like his momentum is continuing as well.
Beyond New Hampshire, what do you see happening?
Beyond New Hampshire, we've got limited polls in a number of other states. Hillary Clinton continues to do reasonably well in South Carolina. That being said, though, she loses a second state in a row, and she's going to be in real trouble in South Carolina and probably some other states as well moving forward.
Rudy Giuliani's campaign strategy, and to some extent, I suppose, a few others. Fred Thompson basically said, I sat out Iowa and that kind of thing. Is to wait for the big states. Wait for the big states where there is no retail politics. You don't have to get out and shake hands. People don't get a chance to size you up. It's the war chest that counts. It's the ad stupid kind of thing. It's if you can carpa bomb the viewers with advertising, you can win. Mm-hmm. And name recognition trumps everything. To what extent is this whole song and dance, this mini drama of Iowa, New Hampshire, a couple other early states? We had Nevada, we had Wyoming, we have Nevada, we had Wyoming yesterday. To what extent is that window dressing?
I don't think it's window dressing at all. As a matter of fact, I think it's very important because we've got.
But you still have Rudy Giuliani saying, "Hey, it doesn't matter at all. I'm going to come in and just kick ass on Super Tuesday."
Sure. However, as we've seen, we've got Barack Obama having won in Iowa has just gotten a huge bounce here in New Hampshire. It is nonstop media all the time. We're not talking about John Edwards very much. Yeah, sure, he's up here, he's campaigning a lot, but he's been sort of left out in this whole Clinton Hillary thing because that was the story. That's what the news media is focusing on. If the news media on the Republican side, if they don't focus on Rudy Giuliani until the first state he competes in, which looks like it's going to be Florida on January 29th,
right,
he's out of oxygen. He's got, January 7th, he's still got 22 days until he hopefully, in his mind, wins a state.
Right.
How can that be effective at all when he's sitting out all these other states?
Right. We're talking with Reed Wilson, the associate editor of RealClearPolitics.com, the aggregating site for polls and for news and all these kinds of things. So you're saying that you don't think that Rudy Giuliani is the, 2 months ago conventional wisdom was it's going to be two New Yorkers. It's going to be Giuliani versus Clinton.
Sure.
You're seeing Giuliani fall under the radar. My take on Huckabee is that he's a Pat Robertson, that he's going to have a couple of small successes and then he's going to vanish back into obscurity.
That's a very good point. I think we're going to see a really interesting battle on the Republican side. Mike Huckabee and John McCain genuinely like each other. They're both, they had a couple of debates where it was just the two of them, so they got to know each other a little bit.
And they're both, to a certain extent, populists.
Sure, and they very much dislike Mitt Romney and have both sort of tag-teamed on him.
Who is the corporatist.
Exactly.
Which raises another question. I mean, to what extent is this the populist versus corporatist race, and the media refuses to discuss the populist debate? Mention of it, because if a populist were to come into office, probably the first thing he or she would do, a true populist, would be to start enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act and break up some of these big media monopolies.
As a matter of fact, I've heard quite a lot of discussion of populism lately. It's John Edwards is of course.
Well, he's the original populist.
And Huckabee is a very populist candidate.
And
too.
Ron Paul.
And people are Ron Paul very much. And people are starting to check this out.
Yeah. So, but and yet. You say you aggregate the mainstream media. The mainstream media doesn't talk about populism.
Oh, we've got everybody as well. Believe me, you look on the site, we'll have...
No, but my point is, with the mainstream media not talking about populism, to what extent might, you said earlier, these candidates are getting oxygen or momentum as a consequence of this. To what extent is it really a creation, if not of the primaries, then of the big corporate media?
That's very true. That's very true. This is the field on which the presidential candidates are playing. And, to be fair, nobody ever expected the field to be any different from a media-driven field.
And the media wants to drive the horse race dimension of it because it draws eyeballs and makes advertising more profitable.
And it keeps us in business as well.
Yeah, I guess so, ultimately. Well, all of us, but you know, it seems that the issues are being lost here. You know, the small d democracy is being lost at a certain level.
Well, I think they're actually, I think this is a great thing about the rise of the blogosphere and the internet, is that now there are these one-stop shops where you can go and find out the detailed policy comparisons between a bunch of different candidates.
Yeah, like yours. Reed Wilson, the associate editor of RealClearPolitics.com. Reed, thanks a lot for dropping by today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's going to be real interesting to see how this thing shakes out and to see how this this primary goes tomorrow. Reed, real quickly, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, all three still very much in the race right now.
Very much so, and the race does not end with New Hampshire.
There you go. 27 minutes past the hour.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. You're listening to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Back 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. And here you go, sir. Ted Olson with us. Good to see you.
Thank you, Tom.
The former Solicitor General of the United States. And I what have you been up to since then?
Well, I'm practicing law. I'm trying to replenish the bank account. You know, that tends to go down a little bit when you work in the government.
So, always a good plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're here in support of Rudy Giuliani.
I am. I've known Rudy for 27 years since we were together in the Justice Department and the Reagan administration. I am a good friend, a great admirer of Rudy. I know what kind of a president he would be, and I'm trying to help out in whatever way I can.
I think many of the people who are concerned about Rudy are concerned because they know, they think they know what kind of president he would be. I mean, what are some of the issues that well, what are the positions that would make him a good president?
Well,
in your mind,
people want an outstanding leader. Yes, they might disagree with Rudy on certain policies. Mm-hmm. Let's take the things that he did for New York City. He reduced taxes. He reduced welfare. He reduced crime. He helped convert.
I thought Bill Clinton did a lot of that stuff.
Oh, I think that ask any New Yorker, and I've been talking to a lot of New Yorkers. And he didn't do it all by himself. I mean, there were a lot of people in New York. He had an overwhelming Democratic City Council in New York City. It's an overwhelming Democratic city. But everybody recognizes that there were problems with New York City. It was ridden with crime. It was not a safe place to live. It wasn't even a safe place to visit. And Rudy's leadership and other people's involvement, of course, in the Clinton administration.
But, I mean, at the same time, many other cities in the United States were becoming safer as the economy was improving during the Clinton administration.
Oh, and
there was a general reduction in crime right across the United States.
Yes, but not to the same degree in New York City. And the policies that Rudy put into play had, I think everybody will admit, had a significant effect. He was ahead of the curve with respect to welfare. I mean, the Clinton administration came around to that, but Rudy was way ahead on that. He helped reduce taxes in New York City the first time it had ever happened, and they were reduced 22 times, something like that, in New York City. I used to dread to go to New York City, and now it's a great place to visit. Now, what I'm saying is that, this country faces chronic problems of crime, taxes, the economy, and that sort of thing. But it also occasionally faces acute problems like Katrina or September 11. We want a president that's demonstrated leadership, both with respect to the recurring and longstanding problems this country faces, and who can respond in a crisis with the right kind of instincts.
Ted Olson, one of the iconic moments for Rudy Giuliani is running down the street, you know, as the rubble is escaping, and you see it in his campaign commercials or in the press. But there are those who suggest that the reason that he was running down the street was because he was essentially homeless, because in exchange for a $100,000 campaign contribution, he had put the command and control center for emergencies in New York in a building that had already been attacked once by terrorists against the advice of his policy advisors. How is he going to be able, I mean, that attack is coming already from his Republican colleagues. If he's the nominee, it's certainly going to come from the Democrats. How is he going to respond to that?
Oh, the facts are that many, many people were involved in the decision to place those, in the first place, it wasn't the only center. No one predicted the kind of attack that happened on that day. Many people advised that. There were many things that would have been wrong with some of the other locations, including if you put a command center underground, you're very, very vulnerable to flooding or gas kind of attacks. No one is perfect in terms of predicting what was going to happen on that day. Everyone was surprised. It's fine to say we should have been able to see what would happen. What I'm talking about is that as much as we could have prepared for a terrorism attack, and where could it happen next? Do you know? I don't know. We do know that it could be coming. What we want is someone who can react and can provide people with inspiration, leadership, a calming impulse, to know how to be there where the people needed it. And to emphasize what he did is we can come back. We are New Yorkers. We cannot be defeated by terrorism. That kind of message resonated with people, Republican, Democrat, Independent. I mean, political parties meant nothing then. What people needed were needed inspiration, a calming influence, a recognition that someone was in charge, and someone who had the instincts to be there where the people needed them to be when there was a crisis.
We're talking with Ted Olson. Mr. Olson, you were one of the advocates for the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
I really wasn't an advocate of the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I was a defender of Ken Starr, who's someone I had known for a long time. I knew Ken's integrity. Uh-huh. I knew the job that he was given by judges of this country. Okay. And I thought the attacks against Ken Starr were unfair and unfounded. And I was a prominent, and as was my late wife Barbara Olson, defender of Ken Starr. I was never writing articles advocating the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
I'm curious in that context, and I think we just got a cue from, if this woman here is your handler, that you need to get going.
I wish she would handle me.
But, I'm curious about your thoughts of the possibility that crimes have been committed in this administration that should be prosecuted.
Well, I haven't seen any evidence of crimes having been committed in this administration. I think that in any set of government, you can have people making wrong decisions, and if there's crimes committed, they should be prosecuted. And if anybody would do that, Rudy Giuliani would do that. He demonstrated
prosecutor.
He was a prosecutor. He demonstrated zero tolerance for civic corruption. Was one of the most important things he did for New York City as United States Attorney. And as Associate General.
A lot of people think he was a very good mayor. His plan to really kick off his campaign on the 20th or the 25th in Florida with that primary, a lot of political pundits are suggesting all the oxygen is going to be gone out of the room by then. How is he going to deal with between now and then?
Well, I think Rudy's been running a campaign for the nomination of the Republican Party and election of president of all the states and all the people of the United States. Iowa was the most important place in the planet yesterday or the day before yesterday. And today it's New Hampshire. In the next few days it's going to be Michigan, Florida, New York, California, New Jersey, Ohio. Rudy's very, very strong with voters in those states. He will be just fine.
Ted Olson, thanks a lot for dropping by.
Tom, I appreciate it.
Great meeting you. Thank you. 241. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Mike in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. A few things. With Ted Olson, he mentioned that Rudy Giuliani would make a great leader, and I think that's the kind of Republican mindset. They're always looking for the best leader, someone to lead them out of crises after crises. They don't look for the best representative, however.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been easy to get into a food fight with him. I was curious to get his take on Rudy Giuliani, but yeah, you're right.
The other thing is when you talked to State Representative Mark Clark during the last break, he made a wildly irresponsible and markedly disingenuous claim that he had seen seatbelts lead to injuries. And, well, yes, it's true that seatbelts themselves can cause injuries, but the seatbelt contusion that typically results from a major impact is infinitely preferable to the ruptured spleen or skull fracture or broken neck that so often occurs in unrestrained automobile accidents. It was a very irresponsible thing that used to, for a previous healthcare professional to say. maybe it comes from this idea of, like, if you didn't have a seatbelt and you flew off a cliff, maybe you'd be thrown from the car before the car hit the bottom. But
well, I think what we were seeing was, Mike, and I agree with your position, and so do most medical experts, and so do virtually all governments, and that's why we have these laws, but not just in the United States. But I think that what you were seeing was the triumph of ideology over reality, and that's not a new thing, particularly among libertarians. Dean in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Dean, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Dean, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Dean Cole.
Just great. Thank you.
Yeah, my bride's hello. We've kind of switched from Hillary to Barack, and I wanted to tell you why.
Okay, you mean you as a voter or as a supporter? Yeah, okay. Sure. Why?
And we're big Clinton fans and have always been, and I actually think Hillary would be a terrific president.
Mm-hmm.
However, I happen to have a lot of Republican colleagues, and I talk to them all the time, and they just can't stand the woman. And I just think that it would be the one thing that would energize the Republicans to come out is Hillary. So that would make a tougher electability for her. And even if she was elected, I think we'd have 8 years of Hillary bashing from the right-wing radio talk show host. So horrendous.
Dean, they're going to bash. First of all, good on you for making political decisions and looking at the candidates and like that. And I frankly prefer Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton. I prefer John Edwards over Barack Obama. I think all of them, however, would make great presidents. But the reality is that, A, the Republicans are going to bash anybody, and, B, the Obama bashing has already started. In the last 5 days, I've gotten at least a dozen emails, several of them forwarded to me from people, but several of them just because I happen to be on some Republican mailing lists, about how Barack Obama is a secret Muslim, how he's part of the secret plan to Muslim takeover of the United States, how his father was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, just all this absolute hysterical, paranoid stuff. And, he went to a madrasa when he, in fact, didn't. And he refused to be sworn in on the Bible and instead the Quran, which was Keith Ellison, not Obama. And I mean, the lies have already started, and not just started. I mean, we're talking about emails that millions of people are getting. So, and I guarantee you, if it's John Edwards as the nominee, it'll be all about his haircut, or how can a good-looking guy like that not have five women on the side, or whatever. I mean, no matter who the nominee is, the attacks are going to happen. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there who don't like Hillary Clinton, but there's a lot of people who don't like any of the candidates. What we have to do is be putting forward the positive message on each one of them. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, Nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Ty Pennington here for Bayer. Looking for a healthy resolution you can stick with? Resolve to talk to your doctor about starting an aspirin regimen. Taken regularly, aspirin can help reduce the risk of a heart attack up to 32% for those at appropriate risk.
Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer is a proud supporter of the American Heart Association's START program.
Bayer Aspirin. Expect wonders.
Use as directed.
My friends laughed at me when I said I could order in French, but when the waiter came, I just smiled and said, Je voudrais le poulet et le riz.
Discover the world's fastest way to learn a language, guaranteed. It's the amazing Rosetta Stone software, and you can try it free. Request a free demo CD-ROM by calling 1-800-349-5311. There's no tedious translation, useless memorization, or boring drills. Call 1-800-349-5311. 1-800-349-5311.
Joyfully subversive.
I have watched politics since I was 7 years old.
Tom Hartman, Heidi Tauber, and Carl Wolfson.
I have never seen a field of candidates such as this Republican field with more whack jobs in it. These people...
Breakfast for your brain.
And all they're trying to do is run these little perfect campaigns, and Mike Huckabee trying to appear warm and Christian, and Mitt Romney without a hair in place. And these are some nutcases. Serious nutcases.
Tom Hartman, Heidi Tauber, and Carl Wolfson. Morning 6 to 9, AM 620 KPOJ.
Like most parents, you probably see your child as the typical smart, well-adjusted kid.
Camouflage. C-A-M-O-U-F-L-A-G-E. Camouflage.
Well, your child might not be as well-adjusted as you think.
Issues. I-S-S-U-E-S. Issues.
And if you knew there was somebody in particular who could help your child?
Daddy. D-A-D-D-Y. Daddy.
Wouldn't you want them to help? Well, the truth is, Dad, you're that person. Just by being an involved dad and spending time with your child, you're taking an active role in your child's social and emotional well-being. You're also increasing their chances of succeeding academically and staying in school. So don't take for granted how normal and smart your child seems.
Balance. B-A-L-A-N-C-E. Balance.
Because children need fathers who love and care for them just as much as they need mothers. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative, 100 Black Men of America, and the Ad Council. Call 1-800-790-DADS for free helpful information.
We inherited this business from our father.
Who got it from his father?
Who got it from...
It doesn't go back that far.
Anyway, we are now the custodians of the family legacy.
And all the worries that go with it.
We knew we needed an emergency preparedness plan to protect the business should the unexpected occur. So we went to ready.gov.
Yes, ready.gov.
This is serious. At ready.gov, we found information that would help get us up and running after an emergency.
Like a flood, cyber attack.
Yeah. Fire-breathing dragon.
We thought creating a plan would cost a lot of money, take a lot of time.
Cause a lot of family fights.
But at ready.gov, we downloaded free checklists, templates, and more. With a solid plan in place, we worry less about keeping Rizzo and Sons in business.
Only it should be Rizzo and Grandsons.
And granddaughter.
Yeah, granddaughter.
Go to ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Ready.gov. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. Basketball great Charles Barkley.
I got a little pop quiz for you. What do I have a hard time keeping shut? And what is my nickname? And now I got one for you. Do you know your kid's principal's nickname?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Our infrastructure's eroding, so what if levees break? For disasters, we're not ready. Bush thinks we'll just eat cake, because a dollar is his true god. The people he'll forsake, business will carry on. Glory, glory, Halliburton. Glory,
the Republican theme song. Indeed. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. I think the frantic hand-waving and grabbing of poor Ted Olson's arm by his handler here was because she suddenly looked at the sign and saw that it said Air America under my name. But he was a decent guy. I mean, you know, God bless him. He came on the show.
Maybe they thought you were an airline.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah, the old CIA airline. It probably still is the CIA airline. The voice you're hearing is Samantha Power. Samantha Power is with us. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of A Problem from Hell, America in the Age of Genocide, founding director of the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard University, and a fellow in the office of Senator Barack Obama and one of his senior foreign policy advisors. And welcome to the program, Samantha.
Great to be here.
Great to have you with us. First of all, just kind of a big picture political question. Barack Obama, good on him for Iowa. I mean, congratulations. Major victory. It looks like he's probably going to take New Hampshire tomorrow. We'll see. I mean, obviously, you never want to call these things. But the big states are coming. And in the big states, the Hillary Clinton machine is, I mean, capital T, the capital M machine. How are you going to deal with that?
Well, what we have to do is replicate what we learn from Iowa, New Hampshire. There are no perfect analogs because every state is different. Indeed, every community within every state, of course, is different. But
those were retail politics states.
They were retail politics. But one of the amazing things about the other night, about the victory speech that he gave after Iowa, mm-hmm. and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, he'll have the chance to give another speech tomorrow night after New Hampshire. But That was like a giant infomercial for Barack Obama and his vision for what he's going to do for the country. I mean, my father is a Republican, and even though I've been working for Obama for 3 years, I'd never gotten him to sit down and actually listen to Obama, listen to his plan. He had tears streaming down his face as he watched the speech. What is happening now is, if as we pick up this momentum, people, African Americans, for instance, in this country, who said, you know, white people will never vote for this guy, young people
who said white people will never vote for this guy. I'll get to them in a minute.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, younger people who said older people will never vote for this guy, older people who said young people will never vote.
Yeah.
You know, all of the as the public discourse and the political discourse starts to at least relay the facts of what is going on in these smaller states, which you're right are not perfect petri dishes by any means for the country, but people are then giving Obama a look, and that is the reason that we did need the small state caucus primary process, right? We weren't going to be able to get the United States of America all at once to give Obama a look, to look at the policy plans for Afghanistan, Iraq, defense policy, human rights, health care, immigration, so forth. We were going to have to do it one state at a time, and believe me, in those lean months, we who've been, you know, working on this campaign, it was sometimes demoralizing because we had to tell ourselves this is actually our plan. We're neck and neck in Iowa. We're gaining in New Hampshire, and ultimately we're going to have to do it this way because the lag in the national polls remained pretty static, and people were saying he's done, you know, he doesn't have a chance. But I think this exposure, he's on the cover of every major news magazine, he's, you know, these speeches are getting clipped, people are dropping out of the races, so the debates are going to isolate him and his opposition.
I have a how do you deal with it question. We only have a couple of minutes, so I want to try and really make this tight. I have been getting, I'm on a bunch of conservative mailing lists because I book a lot of conservative guests on this show. I have been getting this email that apparently has totally gone viral in the Republican field and among independents, that Barack Obama, that his father was Muslim, that he went to a madrasa, that he's secretly part of the Muslim cabal that's going to take over the world, that he refused to put his hand on the Bible to when he was sworn in. It was the Quran, you know, conflating him with Keith Ellison. The photograph that was taken when the Star Spangled Banner was sung and he didn't put his hand over his heart, and saying that instead that was his refusing to put his hand over his heart for the Pledge of Allegiance. Just vile trashing of him, and I would guess that probably 5, 10, 20 million people have read this thing. How do you deal with that kind of real slash and burn politics that I don't think, frankly, is coming from another Democratic campaign, or is it?
I don't think we've seen anything as downright spurious and
you know what I'm talking about, this email. I'm sure you've seen it.
Oh, absolutely. I was just we're here on Radio Row, and I was just on a talk show where I was asked why Barack Obama hadn't disclosed the manifold trips he made abroad to the Muslim world before he entered the U.S. Senate. And I said, what manifold trips exactly are you talking about? So maybe this...
You mean like when he was 3 years old?
Right, exactly, when his mother...
when he lived in Indonesia.
Exactly. But to your question, I mean, this is the swift boating problem, and we can expect it. We know it's coming. Hillary Clinton has run a campaign in saying, hey, I'm going to be the best person to combat the swift boaters. I've been there, done that. But I think Obama has shown in the way that he's combated lesser attacks, I will grant you, but by Hillary Clinton, for instance, she sent out a mailer this weekend saying, questioning whether he was pro-choice.
Right, which is nuts. He's got 100% voting record with NARAL.
Exactly. So, and I think he's created a website, speaks out immediately against them, learned the lesson of John Kerry. The problem with the swift voting was not merely the swift voting. It was that
Kerry waited 19 days to say anything.
To actually respond. And that is the lesson. And I think what you're seeing from independents and the number of Republicans like my dad and others who are crossing over is that they're smarter than that. And they know what that kind of hype and extremism has wrought. And I think people are tired of living in a country where 50% of the country hates their president. There's a hunger, and it's not 100%. He's not going to have 100% approval rating. But even if you could imagine getting something like 2/3 of the country to actually support their president, to believe in public service, to think that we could turn around some of these blunders and restore our standing in the world, I mean, that's a very different kind of working majority.
I think the last time we had a country like that was 63.
Yeah, usually it requires war. It's very rare that you get it. I mean,
well, this was just the charisma of John Kennedy, and I see that to a large extent in Barack Obama as well.
Terrific.
Samantha Power, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of A Problem from Hell, America in the Age of Genocide, and a senior policy advisor to Barack Obama's campaign. Thanks so much for being with us, Sarah.
Thank you.
Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from New Hampshire from Radio Row. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. So we'll see you then. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there. Get active. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program for exclusive.
extensive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.